Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And I'd like to ask you, what is beyond medicine? And you probably have a lot of ideas about that. because medicine has its limitations. So fortunately, there's an incredible book to take us on that path of going beyond medicine, but from a doctor's point of view. And this is a book that I love so much. It feels like being home in the middle of reading it. It's beautiful. And it's called Beyond Medicine, A Physician's Revolutionary Prescription for Achieving Absolute Health and Finding Inner Peace, which I think that's the key. And so to help us understand how to get beyond medicine is the author, and I'm so happy that she's a guest on Energy Stew, Patricia Musum. Is that how you pronounce your last name?
Perfectly.
Oh, thank you. Perfect. And thank you for being on Energy Stew. I'm thrilled to talk with you and to meet you, and because there's so much wisdom in this book that you obviously hold dear, and reading this book, I also have taken advice from you from the book and am altering things in my life, even though I thought I knew a lot. You never know enough, right? I mean, we're all students all the time. But there were things that I knew about that I wasn't paying attention to, and you brought me to that place of being aware of how important some things are that many of us overlook. So even for an audience that we have that knows so much, I'm sure, this is a book that really helps you own who you are and how to be better at it. So Trish, can I call you Trish?
Yes, please do.
Thank you. Thanks for being here. And I love the wisdom that you bring and how much you talk about taking care of ourselves in pure beingness. You know, it's not about doing. But then again, let's talk about that too, because you have a lot of things to do in the book, but it's because they operate magically from holding that place of being, right?
That's right.
And so that's why I'm so happy. You have right away, the first chapter, it says, home sweet home. And that's to bring us back to this inner place even exterior place. Let's call it universal place of who we are. And to be true to that being is the key to health. And then allow that space to be magical.
Mm-hmm. That was beautifully said.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
Well, I you know, it's, after reading your book, it's not hard to speak that way. So one of the things you start off with is understanding the difference between the sympathetic and parasympathetic systems. And I know it's very important for us to live with that understanding so we can manage it better. Mm-hmm. So how would you recommend we do that?
Sure. Yeah, that's a really helpful, helpful question to explore. I talk a little bit about it in the book. I use some science to explain the difference between the sympathetic and the parasympathetic nervous systems. And I'll mention a little bit right now if that would be helpful to you.
Sure.
Okay. So we have what's called in our Western medical worldview, the autonomic nervous system. And it's called autonomic because it's essentially under automatic control, although we can control it. And that system is divided into two parts, the sympathetic and the parasympathetic parts. And the sympathetic is called the fight or flight or freeze system that many people may have heard of. It's the system that we need to have turned on to be alert, active, vigilant. If we're a New Yorker crossing a street like I do frequently, being a New Yorker, we need to be mindful if there's a cab about to jump a red light. We need to be vigilant if there's a dog coming towards us that's aggressive. That sympathetic nervous system heightens our awareness. It raises our blood pressure. It raises the speed of our heart rate. It raises the speed of our breathing. It turns on the stress hormones, adrenaline, and all of that we need to be turned on and up to be active, alert, to be vigilant, to be on the watch for something that we may need to be mindful of. That system inhibits all the good stuff that's supportive and nurturing for us. It inhibits sleep. It inhibits digestion. It inhibits rest. It inhibits healing, because we can't be digesting or sleeping, obviously, or resting if we need to be looking out for that saber-toothed tiger, right? That threat, right?
Yep.
And this was evolutionarily very necessary for us when we were cavemen and cavewomen needing to protect ourselves from threats, from environmental threats, from predatorial threats, right? So this is a system that we definitely need to live. We need to survive. The system that's called the parasympathetic system that I mentioned, that makes the other part of the autonomic nervous system, does exactly the opposite. It lowers blood pressure. It lowers the rate of our breathing. It lowers the rate of our heart beating. It turns on all the feel-good chemicals in the brain. It turns off cortisol, or the stress hormones, and it turns on the systems that we need to be turned on for rest, rejuvenation, and healing, fixing the body. And it turns on all that we need to have turned on to digest food if we're needing to eat, or to sleep if we're needing to rest. So these two systems work absolutely in opposition. And when one is on, the other is off. They can't be both on at the same time. They're like a light switch. One toggles on, the other toggles off.
It feels to me like the medical profession is trying to toggle on the sympathetic system when it gives people their diagnoses and prognoses. And all of a sudden, we're in fight or flight to heal ourselves.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. That's a really key point you offer there. You know, in Western medicine, as was my experience as a medical student and as a patient as well, because I've been a patient quite a few times over, and I talk about that a bit in my book, we do tend to horribleize illness in our medical culture. And in fact, in our Western culture, we tend to horribleize illness. That's my invented word, horribleize. We tend to horribleize dying and death. And we create an environment around illness and dying and death that can really facilitate fear. You know, we horribleize it and we can create fear and anxiety. So certainly it's not a culture that helps to support people in the journey of navigating being in a body. So yeah. Yes, it can really create that sympathetic system response of anxiety or fear or vigilance. And that response in itself can keep us sick or make us
right.
sick.
Right. And that reminds me of a guest I had on my show who had, was fighting cancer and tried everything. You know, she did everything she could and nothing worked.
Mm.
And she said, okay, I'm just going to surrender. I'm going to go on a nice trip around the world. And if that's the end of things, it's too bad, but I'm going to take care. I'm going to have fun now.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden her cancer went away.
Went away. Yeah. And you know, that's a really powerful story, because it talks to the power of actually being with what is, with surrendering to what is. And in fact, there's a study that I mention in the book when I talk about the power of being instead of doing, and the power of being present instead of acting, and the power of even being present with what's feeling difficult. And what's feeling difficult? It's always difficult feelings, right? it's always difficult feelings. What's feeling difficult?
Sure.
It's not a physical sensation or a diagnosis or a health issue or a sign. It's how we experience that emotionally. Yes. So this is the power of being with difficult feelings, and how the power of being with difficult feelings can actually move us into that parasympathetic state of repair and healing. And this study was a really important study, and there have been quite a number of studies since then looking at what we call in the field emotional acceptance. So being present with feelings. And you mentioned somebody trying to fight a diagnosis, trying to fight cancer. This was a study of women with breast cancer. And one group was asked to fight their diagnosis as if it were something to be shunned, to be gotten rid of, something that were bad, that was bad. The other group was asked to be present with all the feelings that were coming up around their diagnosis, whether they were despairing or anxious or angry or hope, whatever they were feeling. And the bottom line is, I wouldn't be telling the story otherwise, the outcome was that those women who were able to accept their emotions, to be present with their feelings, no matter how difficult, they had improved health outcomes. They had less symptoms of sickness, and they had, you know, improved findings on laboratory and other medical testing.
Right.
So, you know, it's a very powerful take home message.
Years ago, I studied a system out of France called Total Biology, which says that almost everything is psychosomatic. And so you want to see what is it in you that is the brain says, we can't deal with all this mind trouble that you're in, and psychological trouble. So we're just going to store it in your body somewhere as a disease. And then once you can identify what this mind trouble, psychological trouble is, it has no reason to be in the body anymore.
That's right.
So that was a powerful teaching for me. And you support what you just said before in your book by offering five absolute health tools. And I thought it was really good to examine them, as you do many times throughout the book, is breathing and how you're breathing, and be conscious of it, mindfulness and meditation. And not everybody is a meditator. I'm not even a good meditator. I've had some very powerful meditations, but it's not like a daily thing. But I am a daily contemplator. And so I love to be in peace and just let my mind, you know, without calling it meditation, just let my mind explore where it needs to go. And then you have journaling, which some people are really good at, is being able to write down how they're doing. And mirror work, which I it was like, that means you look in the mirror at yourself and talk to yourself. And that could be very hard for a lot of people. But it's also a way of revealing things that you might not be able to reveal otherwise. And then you have mind-body sensing, which is, as you said earlier, just being present with all of this and being allowing. And you talk about to being able to feel your feelings and understand where they might be in your body, et cetera. And so there's so much in your book of how to support this journey of knowing yourself better in ways that are powerful, you know, that allow you to be whole and healthy and beautiful. So it's that's why I say when I read your book, it just feels like I'm home.
Oh, thank you, Peter. Thank you. I'm really honored. I didn't get to say thank you for that really beautiful introduction and all the wonderful things you said about how this book has been useful for you. So thank you for that.
Well,
I wish I had this book years ago, but then I wouldn't have gone through all that I went through that I share in the book, and I wouldn't have written the book. So.
And at the end, I loved reading all your acknowledgments, because it really was, a supportive community that you've engendered in your life that are really there for you and are people who can contribute.
Yeah, I feel really blessed, grateful beyond words for the people in my life that have happened in my life, often quite miraculously and magically, who've been part of my journey and helps to guide me along my way and help me find my wings when I forgot that I had any. So yeah, I didn't write this book myself. This book was the result of a community of wonderful people and communities of people that helped me be in the place to do that.
And that all fits with how the book works. And along with that, because you know so many people in alternative areas, you have a chapter on many medicines, many ways home. And one of the things that you talk about that I'm very happy is homeopathy. Mm. And so many people, you know, because lately homeopathy hasn't gotten a lot of good attention. And yet it was almost the medicine of choice over 100 years ago.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Yeah, homeopathy has been unfortunately dismissed, marginalized, and effectively dismissed by the mainstream medical community, in spite of the fact, and I describe this in the book for people who are listening and viewing, there is a really wide body of robust research supporting the notion that homeopathy is a valid medical practice, clinical practice. And there's what we call basic science experiments on the phenomenon of homeopathy. So it's disappointing, but it's not surprising just given the nature and culture of how healthcare works, how medicine and science work. And unfortunately, but the reality of life is that there are political and economic factors which dictate, what I call the viable healthcare approaches that are made available to us. I even see it during this whole experience of the invisible microbe that's taken hold of our lives, aka the COVID pandemic.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. There are so many ways that science and doctors can speak to the public in simple forms that aren't sophisticated enough to be accurate. To simplify things, like if you say, well, homeopathy, you know, there's nothing in it, so how can it be worth anything? You know, because they can't find any matter in it. It's a vibrational. But to the, for doctors to say, well, obviously there's nothing to it because we don't believe in vibrations.
Well, you see, doctors are trained to be technicians, not scientific inquirers, right? And doctors don't study physics. We take the easy physics course, most of us, to get into medical school. So we don't learn about the fact that there are phenomena that are non-material, that are non-molecular. In fact, this is a favorite subject of mine that I loved writing about in the book. It's not for everybody, but it was one of my favorite chapters. And that's where I talk about modern physics and how it's come to be really wed to the constructs of ancient wisdom. And that challenges how we understand space and time and matter and consciousness. And had we physicians exposure to these ideas, we might have a very different type of medical training and a very different type of medical paradigm that accommodated such practices. You know, after all, radiation is action at a distance. It doesn't involve matter, but we use radiation therapy in Western medicine. And homeopathy, in fact, is an example of a very common pharmacologic phenomenon called hormesis that we learn about in medical school. So, you know, there's just a culture, unfortunately, that's not exposed to what's called epistemology or epidemiology, to understand how knowledge systems are inherently limited by their own knowledge system. So, you know, we think in Western medicine primarily in forms of cells and molecules and receptors and very material substances. We separate the psyche and the soma for the most part, although there is a burgeoning, growing field of mind-body medicine that's finding really good footing in modern science. But, you know, if somebody's got something going on emotionally, that's the realm of psychiatry. And as we know, in reality, everything is connected. Everything is connected. Our thoughts, our feelings, our physical bodies, even the world around us, even what's happened before and what will happen in the future.
You're reminding me of Rupert Sheldrake and his teachings about the morphogenetic field, which is the intelligence, the embodying intelligence of larger mind, of individual minds, for instance, of in the animal world, and and how you can have these knowings that are species, that have the scope of an entire species, and yet you don't know how it could be, because after all, we only have these little brains in our heads, and that's all there is, according to modern medicine or ancient, not ancient medicine, but modern medicine. And he was harmed by the scientific community when he came out with these great ideas.
Yeah.
And so what you're talking about, and I think that this is a big aspect of life, is that there is that everything is intelligent in ways that people don't understand. Our bodies, our brains are highly intelligent. They don't make mistakes. You know, people think that, you know, it's the brain that's messed up. No, the brain is trying to do its best for us. We're messing it up. You know, there's a higher, the brain is actually holds a higher intelligence. It is, it is a multidimensional world of consciousness. Mm-hmm. Even our thoughts, we have no idea where our thoughts come from. Mm-hmm. And so it goes on and on. And so it takes somebody like you to dig in to, you know, the deeper truths of reality to make sense of how to be whole and healthy. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, there's a big difference between knowledge and wisdom. And there are many, many, many smart people in this world who are not wise at all. Mm-hmm. And what is wisdom? And wisdom is the ability to see deeper and broader and higher and all that to get to what really counts. And your book does it. And so, you know, and you speak it, you know, it's great talking with you.
Thank you.
So, and the book is Beyond Medicine. And we're getting near the end of the show, not that close yet. So how can people learn more?
How can people learn more about?
Yeah, but from your book, where do they go next?
You mean to get the book?
No, to follow up. Do you have a website?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I have a website. It's transformationalmedicine.org.
Oh, good.
And a lot of what I talk about in the book, you'll find on the website in various media forms, some writing, some videos.
I'm
so
glad.
Find more information about the book.
I'm so glad you're so active expanding on all of this. Because each chapter, you know, you just look at it and go, wow, this goes deep. And I want to even go deeper. So you're offering that opportunity.
Yeah, I hope that I can offer readers interesting stories as well that might pique their curiosity to go beyond what perhaps is the norm in their worldview if they haven't been exposed to some of these ideas.
And your life is an interesting story, and just talking about it helps people understand things better.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so.
Yeah, because I think that's how we become wiser, is through our own tripping over life.
of course. And for me, writing the book was a healing of sorts, because I had to really, you know, go within. And I came to the decision that I would be sharing a lot of my story, which was hard at first, but sharing my story was a form of healing for me as well.
Yeah, I can imagine, because when you were young, you had these very advanced experiences out of body, and unfortunately, people didn't understand that. But it was like, wow, you know, when you've been to those places through consciousness that most people don't, you learn things that most people need to know about.
Yeah. They changed the course of my life forever, and I'm so grateful. In spite of the short term consequences of my not really understanding what was going on and telling the wrong people, which I explain in the book, I'm so grateful, because it just changed the course of my life and led me to understand about this greater reality, and that no matter what's going on, everything is always totally cool, even if we don't think so or feel so.
Well, after I read that early story in your life, I knew that I was going to get into this amazing book.
Oh, gee.
Thank you. It's wonderful. And, I can't say enough about it, only because I think it's going to prevail in my future through the changes I can make by reading it.
I'm really honored by that, Peter. Really.
Thank you. This has been so fun. I mean, you know, because this is home. Talking to you it feels like home. You know, we're in the same universe together, and I think our audience is also. I think that's why people are attracted to my shows.
That's wonderful. I think we're actually not so far from each other physically in New York City either. I think we're on either side of the park. Is that possible?
Right. Yeah, I'm on the Upper West Side at 99th Street.
Okay, I'm on the Upper East Side at 75th Street, so we're not so far, kind of diagonally.
Right, and you ran from... Wherever you know, there you ran through Central Park many times.
Many times.
Yeah. Right, those early days.
Yeah.
The world were wonderful.
Wonderful.
Yeah. So we're really at the end of the show now. So thank you so much for being at Energy Stew. I just love talking with you.
Thank you for having me.
And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at PRN.FM. I can be reached at Peter at HeartRiver, HEART River.org. I'd love to hear from you, and thanks so much for listening.